for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 373 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week it's another great doubleheader episode. Things kick off with Adrian Wassel, the editor-in-chief at Vault Comics, who brings us up to speed with all the great science fiction and fantasy offerings the company is making available to fans like me and you. We'll talk about ones that have already come out, that are out in trade paperback, as well as what we can expect from them in the near future. Then everything wraps up with Andy Schmidt, the head of Comics Experience, who's teaming up with Source Point Press to bring his book Achilles Incorporated, which is going to be coming out soon, and he'll give details during our conversation. We talk about the book and many things having to do with it, including characters, the creative team, and what we can expect from this book in the future. So I'm sure you're going to enjoy what both creators have to say. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show. It's great to welcome to the podcast Adrian Wassel from Vault Comics. What's your title? I kind of forget, Adrian.
I am the editor-in-chief at Vault, so I curate our whole line of books closely with Tim Daniel, who does all of the design and
very cool
visuals.
Because I saw you guys, I think the first time was at out at Emerald City, I think over a year ago. And that's where I discovered, I think it was Reactor was the first one that I got. And since then, I bought several others. Reactor, I think, is Donnie Cates, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, it's Donnie Cates and Dylan Burnett, who've done like Cosmic Ghost Rider together, and then quite a few other titles. I mean, Donnie's star has been on the rise, and so has Dylan's. So that's been what's really fun is that we have another book by them coming out called Interceptor, which is in the same world, and it's sort of a prequel to Reactor. That's a free comic book day offering. So everybody who likes Donnie or Dylan's work or wants to check out Vault can get a free comic on free comic book day.
Cool.
Apologies if I lose my voice a little bit.
That's all right.
I was just
thinking two sick people are talking to each other here right now because I've got
there we go.
A cold as well. So it's just that time of year. But Reactor, I think there was what, 3 issues of that?
3 issues out, yeah. So okay. The 4th issue is coming. Donnie and Dylan have been on crazy Marvel deadlines, but we've got a plan mapped out, and the 4th issue is coming, and so we'll have Interceptor and Reactor out by the end of this year, which is great.
Cool. I'm looking forward to that, because I did love that book. Now, since then, I've gotten into some others, and I'll just name a couple, and we can... you can talk about which ones that you feel we should talk about. I read Failsafe, which was a great adventure series that's out in, I think it's out in trade. I really liked that. I liked Vagrant Queen, which is sort of a Star Wars-y kind of a thing that I really liked. Colossi, which was great. Reminded me of the old days when they had TV shows where they have giant props sitting around, you know, and do stuff like that. It was lots of fun. It ends interestingly. I thought that was an interesting way to go. I read also, Powerless, which was another interesting one. I like the concept of that. Now, the interesting thing about Vault to me is that this is kind of a science fiction company, as I understand it.
Yes. Yeah, our focus is fully on science fiction and fantasy. So we definitely entered the publishing space with that genre focus and have said it since day one and will continue saying it. Sci-fi and fantasy are bread and butter. Mm-hmm. And we obviously there are tons of subgenres to science fiction and fantasy, and we try to do our best to honor those and find the subgenres that aren't being explored elsewhere by other publishers or other creators, encourage our creators to explore those subgenres. So, you know, they're pretty big banners. We get to have a lot of fun playing underneath the sci-fi and fantasy banners, but that is our focus, is science fiction and fantasy.
And I somewhere I read that this is a family-owned business.
It is. Yes, actually it is. So my brother and I own Vault along with our cousin, who is an illustrator and works closely with us as an art director on many of our series. And then my very dear friend and partner, Tim Daniel, and I have been working together for long enough that we feel like family. So it is indeed truly a family-owned affair. And then also, you know, we live in the same town and have for a long time and are very close friends.
See, I'm a sci-fi guy. I'm into Star Trek. I'm into, I like Star Wars, but not as much as Star Trek. I watched like Discovery and all these things. So all these things appeal to me. So I haven't gotten to everything that you guys have done, but I'm working on it. And I think it's great. Now you've been talking about the fact that there are a bunch of trades that have come out. Which ones should we, you know, focus on today, just as where we stand at this moment?
Yeah, so I think the first one that's top of mind is Wasted Space by Mike Morisi and Hayden Sherman. Wasted Space is one of our, it's our first, you know, announced ongoing title. So we're running it for at least 20 issues. The first trade is out. We're into the single issues on the second arc. We've done some fun holiday specials and fun little add-ins and bonus one-shots and stuff like that as well. The reason I would, you know, Wasted Space comes top of mind is, we're talking science fiction, and Mike Morisi is the biggest science fiction fanboy I've ever known. He's obsessed with Star Wars, Battlestar Galactica. He's gotten to write for both of those, which is sort of a dream come true for him. And I think all of his favorite components of all of his favorite sci-fi have made their way into a blender in Wasted Space. So he always talks about it as either like Preacher, Garth Ennis's Preacher set in space, or if you took Star Wars and Philip K. Dick and like blended them up, and that's what you got. It's irreverent and very funny, definitely for mature readers, but I haven't really put that book in anyone's hands who hasn't walked away loving it. Maybe a little pissed off, but they usually love it.
What's the premise of it real quick?
So the premise of the book is that Billy Bane is the voice of the creator. He hears this creator, this sort of deity that talks to him, steers him. He steers his congregation, which continues to grow and grow and grow until he's sort of like the most powerful celebrity in all of the galaxy. And he hears this voice tell him to help him elect this political leader that he knows to be crooked. He knows this political leader is a terror, but the voice has never steered him wrong before. So he helps elect this leader. And then sure enough, the galaxy goes into utter chaos. The sort of empire, very much like Star Wars, rises, and the galaxy ends up in a totalitarian state and just a crapshoot. And then Billy Bane disappears, flees, tries to hide out on like the outskirts of the galaxy until a young woman shows up who claims to be the like the vision of the creator, that she's also a prophet, and that she's had the prophecy that they now have to go kill the political leader that he's helped put in power. So it's very, it's a lot of philosophical sort of arguments baked into a hilarious nonstop roller coaster ride of spaceships and action and cool. Weird robots, blue robots. Yeah, it's fun.
Okay. Very good. Very okay. Fun. Other ones that we should be paying attention to.
So, I mean, I think Heathen has been one of our just absolute best-selling titles and a great entry point for many people into our catalog. That volume one of that is out. Volume two is on its way. And that book is about a young woman in a Viking village who gets, like a Norse mythology inspired village, who gets kicked out of her village for kissing another girl. And she decides that she's going to go climb the mountain, rescue Brynhild, and take down the god King Odin and change things so that she can sort of topple the whole pantheon of gods above her. It's a quest. It's really fun. The art is absolutely stunning, and it's written and illustrated by Natasha Alterisi.
Okay, sounds good. So you said the first trade's out, second one's on the way.
Yeah.
Sure, okay, so we got that one. Okay, another one that we should be paying attention to.
So I think there's. I'm gonna kind of cheat and do a bundle of titles that you should be paying attention to. So in 2018, we teamed up with White Noise. They are a collective of creators based in the UK, and we teamed up with them to release four titles: Deep Roots, which you've already mentioned, Frendo, Fearscape, and These Savage Shores. And they have been some of the most critically acclaimed titles, as well as some of the better selling independent titles of 2018 rolling into 2019. So the trades are not out yet for Frendo, Fearscape, or These Savage Shores, but they are in solicits currently or are just coming up. So now's a great time to let a shop know, maybe see if they have an issue one still on their shelf. We've done three or four print runs on every series, and those books have been, you know, acclaimed by Warren Ellis, Scott Snyder, Kieran Gillen. So a lot of the sort of biggest kind of tastemakers out there have been singing their praises, and for good reason. The guys with the White Noise crew are incredible creators. It's been an absolute pleasure to work with them.
Okay. I got to put my plug in for Failsafe, which I really loved. I love action adventure type stuff, because that one, I think the trade's out for that, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, so it is indeed. And Failsafe is Failsafe has some pretty cool news. I don't know if you saw, but Netflix picked that up with Michael B. Jordan to star in it, and Joe Robert Cole, who co-wrote Black Panther, to write it. So Joe is actually doing his take, I think, in April on it, and we're really, really excited, because obviously to have that news has been a huge boost for the book, and that's one of the very first books that we ever published. So it's been really cool to see. Yep, so it's been very cool to see that success. FJ DeSanto, one of the co-writers on that book, is one of our oldest and dearest friends in the industry, so it's been really wonderful to see all the success around his title.
See, I started to read that when I was trying to go to bed, I couldn't go to sleep until I read the whole trade. I had to know what in the heck was going on in this book. So there I read, and finally got to the end, and I was like, you know, because it's one of those great action stories that, you know, you don't know what's going to happen next. And I had so many twists and turns in the story that I loved it. Every time I thought I knew something that was going on, it turned around and I didn't know what was going on. And I liked that in the story. I love to be fooled, you know, because I've been reading comics for a long time. If you can fool me, boy, I treasure that. So, I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, I'm very glad that Failsafe resonated with you. I think that I think we've got some more sci-fi coming this year more action focus that you'll really enjoy as well. Some of them haven't been announced yet, but if you keep an eye on any of our socials, we're on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and all that stuff. You'll see some pretty cool announcements for books that I think will hopefully resonate with you, given how much you enjoyed Failsafe.
That'd be good, because I always have a constant diet for sci-fi. So that's when I came across that
Me
one.
Too.
I was just really like, wow, I said, that's really a good book. But all right. Any other ones that we should mention that are out before we hit the stuff that's coming?
That are out right now. I'll say this one because I'm really excited about it, because we're about to head to Emerald City Comic Con, which is our anniversary show. Hopefully we'll get to see you there again.
I'm not going to be there, unfortunately. Darn it. I'd love to be there. I enjoyed that so much last year. I ran up and down those stairs so many times. It was the best exercise program I ever had. Because if you've ever been to Emerald City, it's in this building, and there are literally six floors. And the con takes up, I think, just about every floor. Just amazing stuff.
Yeah.
It's a great con. I'm really sorry I can't be there, but I'm sure you guys will have another great con there.
Oh, yeah. We always have a great con there. We'll be sad to miss you, but Emerald City is just one of our favorites. That's such a great artist, alley. So for anybody who's, you know, listening and hasn't been to that show, that's one to put on your list for sure. Mm-hmm. So at Emerald City Comic-Con, we're debuting the trade for an early release of the trade for Fissure, which is Tim, my, you know, partner at Vault, his book. It's a really, really fun, creepy sort of sci-fi horror tale. Mm-hmm. I don't want to spoil too much, but it's set in a border town, and this crack kind of emerges overnight that like splits the main street of this little town. And at night, when everyone's sleeping, these strange pheromones sort of release from this fissure that runs down the length of Main Street and calls, it like beckons people to its depths, and there's something down there. It's a very, very cool story. And that's, like I said, we're doing an early release for Emerald City. So we're excited to show that trade off.
Oh, cool. I'll have to get that one, because it's one of the ones I haven't read.
Very good. Great. Yeah, I will be happy to send it to you.
Oh, that'd be lovely. I'd like to see that. Now, any other ones because I've been getting your emails, and you guys have some interesting stuff. I guess the Failsafe must have been one of the emails that I got from you guys. But what else has been going on as far as, what else are you releasing that you can talk about?
So we have a couple upcoming books that have been announced. Most of the announcements have been over at Paste. They've been very, very good to us and really been a big supporter of our brand and our books. So out in April, we have Queen of Bad Dreams, number one. Queen of Bad Dreams is a very cool story about a world in which the figments of our dreamscape can escape into reality. And then there are these sort of kind of Blade Runner-esque inspector judges that have to go and track down these figments and determine if they can be reinserted into a dreamer's mind or if they can be granted agency in our world. So it's a blend of science fiction and a little bit of like psychic abilities. Very, very cool story. A lot of action. I think you'll really enjoy that one if you're a Failsafe fan. And then out the next month, out in May, we have She Said Destroy, which is, you know, the way I sort of always talk about it, like imagine it, the classic Star Wars setup of a sort of two, you know, spaceships kind of passing each other and like, but imagine that they pull up in a light bridge, almost like a old drawbridge from a castle lowers between the two of them. And then you have these two forces like clash on a drawbridge in armor with swords. This blend of sort of medieval fantasy warfare and science fiction. And we talk about it as like old gods on starships. It's a very cool story about the Morrigan, the goddess of death, battling Brigid, the goddess of sun, for sort of to conquer the entire galaxy. So it's a very fun book. That one, She Said Destroy. And then behind that, out in June, another one we've announced that I'm really excited about is Test, and that's with Chris Sabella and Jen Hickman.
Yeah, I saw that.
That book's really cool. We pitch it as a biohack Western, basically, or like a biopunk Western. It's like Stranger in a Strange Town, Man with No Name kind of story. This person, this protagonist arrived in this town where they're selling the future, literally selling tech that cannot exist yet. And then they discover that they've been to this town before many times in a very interesting way. And so I don't want to spoil anything, but that book is, it's a definitely a bit of a mind-bending read.
Sounds good. There's a lot of the stuff I'm going to really be interested in, so very cool. Anything else?
We've got some books on the horizon that haven't quite been announced yet that I'm extremely excited about. One thing that I can plug that has been announced, but I haven't had a chance to talk about it in a little while, is Dark One. We have a fantasy series coming out by Brandon Sanderson, who is a huge fantasy writer. I've long been obsessed with his work. He's done the Mistborn and the Stormlight Archives, and Brandon's writing this book, Dark One, with us, with Jackson Lansing, Colin Kelly, and Nathan Gooden completing the team. And that book is sort of portal fantasy, but it's about this young man who discovers he's, you know, destined to go to this fantasy realm, except it flips the trope and he's destined to go and be the Dark One, the destroyer of worlds. And it's about his story into this fantasy world and whether he's going to fulfill what he's ultimately supposed to do, which is be the bringer of darkness, the destroyer of all things. It's a very cool story, and it's not actually as like dark as it sounds, because the main character, Paul, he desperately wants to be good, but he's also got this role to fulfill, and he discovers that maybe there's some things in this world that deserve to be destroyed.
Okay. Yeah, it sounds interesting. I'm really looking forward to that. Now, I did want to bring up one other one, because I was looking through Comixology, and that's where I got some of your books, was through Comixology. There's a free issue zero for a series called Bonding. And I got a huge kick out of it, because the first sentence says, a man, a woman, and their parasites.
Yep.
Which, of course, got my attention right away. So I've read that first issue, which I really like. What's the story with Bonding? When's that going to start coming out, or has it already?
I'm really glad you brought that up, because Bonding is actually one of the first releases in our young adult, middle grades, and young reader imprint titled Myriad. So end of this year, rolling into 2020, we'll be releasing books under the imprint Myriad for some younger readers. And Bonding is a young adult book, but it deals with themes that I think will make it very appealing and accessible to readers older as well. And the story is about aliens come to Earth in a very sort of opaque way. We almost don't even realize they arrive. They set up these weird sort of hovering spheres over all these major cities, and they force humans to bond with these parasitic slugs that sit on their chests. And then that's it. They're like, all right, go back to life, carry on. If you unbond, you die. And so this slug becomes a kind of external manifestation of everything we keep internalized. So if you're sick, the slug shows it. If you're anxious, your slug might show it. And so the story follows two young people trying to maintain and create relationships, fall in love, build friendships in this suddenly even stranger world where everyone is forced to have this bizarre slug on their chest. So it's somehow heartwarming and really kind of gross all at once, which is what I love so much about it.
Now, let me just real quickly go over some of the emails that I've gotten about you guys, because I thought it was really interesting. It said you're debuting a deluxe black and white edition of These Savage Shores number one. How do you get that? Because some people are into black and white these days.
So we decided to do the These Savage Shores black and white edition because Sumit's inks are just incredible. I mean, Vittorio's colors have elevated every page he's touched, but it's also the case that Sumit's inks are just so excellent. It felt almost like a disservice not to show people his raw work. So we put together the inks and did a black and white on even nicer stock with a very hefty cover and then a little bit of bonus content. And I think that's out end of March, last Wednesday of March. It's a beautiful, beautiful book. It's really just, especially if you have the colored version, it's incredible to see this black and white version, because you get to see what Sumit's done, but also in a way you get to see what Vittorio has done with the colors and how brilliant his decisions were too. And that's just the first of a number of black and white editions that we'll be releasing So we've got some others in the works that we'll be announcing in not too long, really to do the same thing, to just honor our artists that have created such exquisite inks. And you know, we've got a lot of fans who've been clamoring for this sort of thing. So it's been really nice to be able to pull these together and answer that demand.
Okay. Now, the one other thing I thought we should talk a little briefly about is that, you know, you've got a Vault Bound, Comics and Community Initiative, and you're providing comic shops with up to 25,000 retail value worth of product to support a variety of community engagement events. Wow. I mean, that's really great. That also helps get the word out about your stuff, too.
It does, indeed. And, you know, so Damien and I, we've always tried to be very accessible and engaging with comic shops. And Kim, who's our director of marketing here, is probably the most accessible person in comics. And she's constantly working with shops to help improve, sell-through on our books and engagement with our books. And, you know, one thing that we heard time and time again was that these community events were just so important to shops and really a great way to introduce readers to new brands, but also bring new readers into the doors of the store itself. So Damien and Kim cooked up this great idea to offer shops the ability to just, all they have to do is log onto our website and fill out a very, very simple form saying like, hey, here's the event and here's the kind of stock we would love to have there. And then, you know, as long as it's reasonable and they're not like, hey, please send us all $25,000 worth of your books. We've already set up a number of great community events with stores, and I'm really excited about the Bound initiative. And I have to give all credit to the people who deserve it, Kim and Damien, for cooking that up.
Very cool, because when I saw that, I was like, that's really interesting, because a lot of the times I know schools are looking for, there are many comic stores I know, and schools come to them asking for product to put out for their students and stuff to read. And I've seen many schools get free stuff from comic stores and stuff, so I think that's a really great idea. I think that's a wonderful way to interact with the community. Now, speaking of interacting with the community, you mentioned Emerald City, which you'll be on the last day when this posts, but other conventions, I think I saw you at New York as well. So why don't you tell people what other conventions you're going to be at this year?
So I'm not certain I'm going to make it to New York this year, but I will be at San Diego Comic-Con. Okay. I will certainly be there. And then I believe we're trying to potentially do Baltimore later in the year as well. Mm-hmm. Baltimore is sort of home turf for us. My brother and I were both born in Annapolis. Oh. So it's nice to be able to go back and see some family. Mm-hmm. San Diego, after Emerald City, San Diego is the next show where you can certainly catch the whole Vault team. We'll have a booth there. And a bunch of creators will be debuting some cool books and have some exclusives and all that fun stuff.
Oh, cool, because I'm trying to get to San Diego again this year because I like San Diego. It's one of those places that things happen. You know, it's a great place to go. I do love New York. Last year they had a really strange setup, but they had Baltimore a week before New York. So we ended up, because we live in Florida, my friend who does a comic and I, and the two of us stayed up there. We just kind of, you know, sauntered around Baltimore for a week, and then we went to New York in time to do that. This year it's 3 weeks later than New York, which is an interesting thing. Mm-hmm. So, but Baltimore is known as a comic convention. They rarely get anybody who has anything, is not associated with comics in some way. So that's a good thing.
Right. Right. Yeah. That's a great thing. That's one of the things I love about Emerald City is that it has such a true comic heart. It's all about the comic books. And we really look for shows like that because of the kind of books we put out. You know, we publish science fiction and fantasy, pretty deep dive stories that are really focused at comic book readers who've been doing this for a while or venturing into the space because they're huge sci-fi and fantasy nerds like us. And so it's really great to have meet those fans and foster those communities.
Mm-hmm. I'll make a quick suggestion if I can. It's not far from New York, but AwesomeCon in Washington, D.C. Maybe it's because there's so many politics there, which is just unreal a lot of the time, but that's a huge sci-fi community there. They used to say when Star Trek Deep Space Nine was on, the highest ratings they got were in the Washington, D.C. area. And it's
The Washington, D.C. area is, like I said, where I'm from. I'm from born in Annapolis.
Yeah.
So that makes sense. I have not actually done AwesomeCon, so that's great. I'll add it to the list and check out the dates and see if maybe that's one we can attend, because that would be really fun.
Because I'm going to that one this year. That's one of the ones I've got a press pass to. But I have to say, I enjoy it. It's just a huge place. They have this, you can't say it's a dealer's room, because it's just this whole floor is basically filled up with dealer stuff. They'll sell Doctor Who stuff. They'll sell all kinds of stuff, and my brother loves it, who's also a sci-fi guy, and he's big on Doctor Who, so he goes there and buys that kind of stuff. But you can get a wide variety of stuff. Just a suggestion. When I hear talk about science fiction, I hate to not mention it, because I think it's a place you guys could thrive in.
Excellent. Well, no, I deeply appreciate the recommendation, because we've had so much success finding some of the sort of smaller shows, like we did SuperCon in Sioux Falls last year, and had just an absolutely wonderful time and got to engage with a community that, you know, doesn't really get a lot of presence from publishers and are really avid readers. And, you know, it was very, very nice to go there, meet all these people that have been supporting Vault Books since day one in person. And anytime we can find a con, you know, that's not one of the giant flagships like a San Diego Comic-Con, but something like AwesomeCon, we're always really excited to see if we can make the dates work. So I really appreciate the suggestion.
Well, I just look into it and see if that works for you. If it doesn't, you know, hey, it was a suggestion. Maybe next year or something,
right?
I consider it.
Yep.
But yeah, it's good talking with you, Adrian. And I love your stuff. And the more I hear about the other stuff that I haven't gotten into yet, I'm going to get into those. I love the company name. I just got to ask, why is it called Vault Comics? Is it like the vault? You get stuff out of the vault? Is that how that works?
So, yes. It's, it's twofold. One, we like to believe, like all the treasures are in the vault. Come open the vault and find all your treasures, your favorite sci-fi and fantasy. And then also the second meaning, to leap, we want to, you know, sort of vault to the top. We want to carry everything forward in big strides. And that's why we landed on the name.
Very good. Well, it's unlike anything else. Now, everybody else wants to crowd up at the A's, you know. You guys are down in the V's, which is it's a separate place to be. But sometimes, you know, it's like when stars are on a TV show and they don't necessarily get to be amongst the main people. They also starring at the end, it'll have their name. That makes it
easier. Right.
At the beginning or the end, it's when you stand out. So I think that's really cool. Well, Adrian, keep it up. I think it's wonderful stuff. I just, you know, I'm dying to get more into it, because every once in a while I discover a company that I love what they're doing, and the Vault is the one that I'm discovering, and I just, I've got to read more of your stuff, because it's wonderful. And we'll have to talk again, because I'm sure you mentioned there are some projects you can't talk about right now. Maybe as we get down the line, we'll have to do some more talking about that, because it sounds great.
Yeah, I'd love to talk again and, you know, chat your ear off about some of our stuff that's actually coming out in 2019, and maybe bring somebody else from the team on and get to hear their perspective too. Tim's always really fun to hear from, because he's worked on design for just about everyone in comics, so he has such a cool history and knowledge of the comic book space. He's more fun to talk to than me, honestly.
I don't know about that.
But I'd love to come back. Come back on and maybe bring somebody else from the team, and we could chat again.
Yeah, no, just again, it's vaultcomics.com. If you go to Comixology, you've got a nice collection of stuff on there. And you said you're on Facebook. Where else are you at?
Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. It should be pretty easy to find. Vault Comics, if you can't find us, just go to the website, and then you can easily, you know, find our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram from there.
Cool. Well, much success, Adrian. And I know it's coming because there's a lot of us sci-fi people out there. We're not only Long John's fans. We like stories that challenge our thinking and stuff like that. And that's what Vault does really well. So all I can say is keep going. You're doing wonderful stuff.
Well, thank you so much. And thank you for having me on. It's been an absolute pleasure. And I look forward to the next time.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast, so you can keep reading your comics.
I'm talking right now with Andy Schmidt, the president and publisher of Comics Experience. And he's got a book coming out that I got a chance to look over, and I think you guys are going to enjoy it. It's called Achilles Incorporated. How are you doing, Andy?
I'm doing great, Wayne. How are you?
Good, good. It's good to talk with you. Before we get into Achilles Incorporated, why don't you talk a little bit about your background, because that might have some influence on folks, especially if you're a Marvel fan. I think you worked with Marvel for a while, didn't you?
I did. I was in editorial at Marvel, so I started as an assistant editor back in the early 2002 and worked my way up. So when I left in 2007, when my son was born, I was an editor, and I was primarily in the Marvel Heroes office, so FF and Avengers, and it was a super cool time to be working there, and I got to work on so many projects and with so many great creators. It was just a ton of energy, and I got to learn a lot. So, you know, I got to work on everything from New Avengers to Secret War was one of the first books that I edited, you know, where I got the sole editor credit. And I was the editor who launched Annihilation, which led to the Guardians of the Galaxy. So I had like a really good run. I worked on the Winter Soldier stuff with Ed and Steve. So yeah, it was a really cool time to be at Marvel. And then when I left, I went to be a stay at home dad, and I was a teacher. I taught college before I went to Marvel, and when I left, I was stay at home dad. And then my wife would come home from work, and then I'd go out at night, and I started Comics Experience, where I teach courses on how to write and draw, edit, and all that stuff for comics.
Really cool, because it says in the back of the front page, it says special thanks to the members of the Comics Experience Creators Workshop. So is that one of the things you do?
Yeah, so we do. So it's all online now. So if anybody's interested, it's just comicsexperience.com. No funny spelling, no X. It's just comics plural experience.com, and we have courses that folks can take, and then we have a creators workshop, which is a 24/7 online sort of environment. We have videos on there. There are numerous professionals. Some of the guys that you've interviewed, Cullen Bunn, Philip Seve, guys like that you can ask questions to. We have industry discussions. How do you market your books? How do you network? How do you work a convention and actually make money at them? And, you know, we cover everything in the workshop, but a big part of it too is it's a really great place, safe place with knowledgeable people where you can post your work, whether it's your artwork or it's a script or something that you're working on, and you can get peer reviews from people, you know, like you who are know their stuff and they're into it and they're learning. And also we have professionals that do critiques. We've got some former Marvel editors that do a lot of critiques for scripts. And then we've got professional artists and things that do critiques on art. So the workshop is a place where anybody from a complete newbie to working professionals. So some of our pros use the workshop and get feedback on there, because just because you might be newer doesn't mean that you don't see something that needs work and you can articulate it. So it's been a really powerful creative engine, an empowering engine for new creators. And it's been wonderful. And now we're publishing with Source Point Press, which is fantastic.
So is your book the first book that's come out from Comics Experience?
We launched with Source Point. We launched with four titles. Okay. They are coming out in Diamond, sort of more staggered. But Family Graves came out through Diamond already, which is sort of a Fantastic Four meets the Munsters sort of a book. It's really it's super fun. Mm-hmm. That was a 4-issue miniseries. Got a graphic novel called Wretched Things, which is about a family that moves into like an old house and is clearing out all the vermin and all that sort of stuff. And the vermin decide that they're not going to take it. So they fight back. Sort of this sort of dark take on the Secret of NIMH, but it deals with some really very interesting and very cool themes that I think are actually pretty relevant today. And then Achilles Incorporated and Grief. Grief is a one-shot anthology written by Frank Gogol, which is a bunch of short stories that he wrote all of them and hired all the artists and got them all together. And it's all stories dealing with different aspects of grief. And that was one where Travis, the publisher at Source Point, and I looked at it and we were like, anthologies don't sell well. Double-sized books with a higher price point don't typically sell well. But we just kept looking at that book and going, but this is a book that really has something to say and is going to reach people. And I'll tell you, Travis and I have been really pleased with how that book, you know, at conventions sells, because it's such, we didn't think of it this way, but it wound up being just such an easy sort of buy-in of everybody's experienced grief. And so there is this, it really has moved, and we've had a lot of people come back and, you know, tell us, but they'll buy it one day and then come back to a show the next day and tell us how much they enjoyed it or how much it, you know, they connected with something in it. So that was a really nice thing where it's like, we published it because we really felt like this is really worthy. You know, this it's a book that should exist. Mm-hmm. But we weren't really convinced that there was a market, but it seems to have found its audience. So it's been really great.
Sometimes you have to follow your heart and publish something that you may not think with your head's going to do well, but you know, in your heart, it's really something special.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, this whole thing is, you know, Travis actually came to me because he liked what we were doing with Comics Experience. He saw creators that were coming out, coming up through our courses and through our workshop. And so he had sought me out at a convention just to talk initially. And then the publishing program sprang from that, because we had all these creators who had really done all this work to come a long way, and they were doing really good work. And the industry is just, frankly, very tough to get people to look at your stuff and to get it, you know, editors and that sort of thing, publishers look at it. So we decided, like, this is a good, you know, we can provide good content for Source Point, and it gives new creative voices in the industry a platform to get their work out. And it's been, you know, the response to the books has been really like overwhelmingly positive so far. So right now everybody is really happy.
Well, good. Let's hope it stays that way. That would be fun to have that go on that way. I know Source Point Press somewhat. Bob Sally does Salvagers over there, and Ogre he's doing, and so I know all that thing. I've met Travis a couple of times, talked with him. And I'm just kind of curious, though, as far as your book goes, you've talked, some of them will come out in trades. Is Achilles Incorporated going to come out in a trade, or is that going to be a monthly book?
It's a 4-issue miniseries. Okay. So the first issue drops in April in a comic store, hopefully near you. Hopefully you have one near you, listeners.
Yep.
Then each issue every month after that. It's a 4-issue miniseries.
Well, that's cool, because it's a really interesting concept. And I've got to talk with you about the basics concept of it, because it's something that certain friends of mine and I always sit and talk about. Why is it everybody gets powers and they become very moral, you know, in their use of things? And we always expect that. You know, we expect Spider-Man or Superman. But your book says that that's not always the case. And I like that about it. Well, talk a little bit about what Achilles Incorporated is about.
Well, yeah, so... That's exactly right. So the underlying premise of the book is about 10 years ago, you know, at the point that the comic starts, about 10 years earlier, there was sort of this flash of light, like all in an instant, this tiny sliver of the population across the planet, not just one geographic area, got superhuman abilities. And less than 1% of the population. So it is rare, but when you got 7 billion people on the planet, that still means there's like a million of them. The premise was really, I mean, the premise developed in my brain over time, and we can talk about that if you want, but really what it is, what I decided was, well, not everybody would dress up in colorful costumes and just start punching and hitting one another. Like, that's probably not what would happen. Maybe it is, because we've all been indoctrinated now with some superhero stuff, but that they would just go out and they would kind of do normal things. They would get jobs, but because they have these special abilities, you know, one of them could do the work of 50 or 100 or 200 normal human beings. So they're called boosters, and often they refer to us normal folk as duds. But what the real premise is that they basically just put, you know, the world in this mass unemployment. They got this massive power. They've manipulated, the government and the laws and the rules and all that sort of stuff. And that's all kind of, background in the book. You know, that's not the driving plot of the book, but that's the world that we're in. And our main character, Ransom, was a police officer who got put out of work and started Achilles Incorporated. So he's a human, and he works with some partners, and his job basically is, when one of these boosters is getting uppity, he figures out what their Achilles heel is, and he goes and takes them down, even though he's only human. Mm-hmm.
See, that's the interesting thing to me, is the hero of the book is not a hero, or I shouldn't say, is not superpowered. Maybe that's a better way to say it. And he's after people who are powered, and they're not necessarily superheroes. Because many of them I look at, I don't see that they are really heroic in their nature.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where, I actually reread the series today before hopping on here. And it's the first time I've read it in a while. And, you know, of course, every time you read something, you're like, ooh, I wish I'd done this slightly differently or whatever. And some of the superpowered characters come off a little bit more, more villainous, I think, than I think I would really like. And if I had an extra issue or two, I could flesh out and we could meet a few more boosters that weren't sort of tipping more evil. Like the idea for the world is that they do what people do, mm-hmm. which often is look out for their interests. But there are boosters in this world that are generally good natured, or, you know, trying to make sure that they don't hurt other people when they use their abilities. But yeah, we don't have a lot of colorful costumes.
No.
But you know, once you've got the underdog, you know, the bulk of the characters that we meet of the boosters, like the very first booster that we meet is a woman who's sort of doing crowd control with some force fields. And she actually, you know, she's a part of this power core, this organization that kind of runs most of the boosters. But she's even keel. Like she has nothing against, you know, normal humans and doesn't want to see anybody hurt. If I were to go back and do more, and frankly, I'm probably too busy at this point to go and revisit this, at least in the foreseeable future. I think I would get into more characters that are more in the gray zone.
Well, it makes sense though, that being human beings as they are, when you get an advantage, not everybody is good about it. Some people are real jerks when they get to have an advantage over somebody else. And that's what's kind of going on here, is that the good guys probably are in towards the background because that's kind of their nature. The people who are the more aggressive or the more destructive are the ones that are going to stand out in this kind of a situation. And I think that's why we see so many of the ones that we do, is because they are the right ones that are going to be at the forefront.
Right. And Danny, who's on Ransom's payroll, I guess, is a booster, and she's, you know, she doesn't like what she sees. You know, what she sees is abuse of power. And so she's kind of sided a little bit with Ransom in the grand scheme of things. So she's kind of a fun character, because, you know, the other boosters look at her like, you know, like, you're a traitor. And she's like, actually, we should all be in this together. You know, mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, it's fun. I also, you know, wanted to make sure that Ransom wasn't like this wholesome hero. I mean, he's certainly got his faults. And he is a complete smartass, which I have fun with. But he's not, you know, he's not your traditional sort of, you know, truth, justice, in the American way sort of, you know, hero.
Yeah.
Which is fun.
Well, I like the fact that he's Asian, which is nice to see a lead who's diverse, shall we say. It's nice to see that. There's one sequence of that stands out to me. There's a sequence in which Ransom is being asked to do things by four different people. And his response when he realizes he's got to do other things besides do their stuff, he sits there and tells them why they shouldn't be getting help, which I really enjoyed. Gosh, I laughed and laughed about that.
Yeah, it's funny you bring that up because that's in the first issue, and when my brother read the script, that was his favorite moment in the script. He said the same thing. He's like, that was funny, but it also showed like how smart he really is. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that Ransom does in the book, which was you know, I don't think I'd ever really written a character that did this. I mean, I tend to write, you know, Marvel characters, or I'm writing for Star Wars or something, or Transformers or G.I. Joe. So I don't get to write a lot of characters who intentionally want you to think that they're dumber than they are. And Ransom does. There are several points where he plays down, you know, kind of what he's doing. There's, you know, we have this sort of motif of chess in the game. Like there's this massive game of chess, and he's, you know, sort of telling the big bad guy, Rice, that, you know, like, I was never really good at chess. You know, I could never think 10 moves ahead. And you know, he's never quite that on the nose about it, but he's convincing Rice that Rice is smarter than him. So he'll be underestimated. He kind of manufactures the situation in which he'll be underestimated, which was a fun thing to try and figure out how to make that work, and make it visual in a comic, because I don't just want a whole bunch of talking heads.
Yeah, and I love the character. I think he's funny. You know, it's interesting because he's got to be really smart in order to be able to work with these people. But on the other hand, superpowered people tend to rely on those powers rather than their wits, shall we say?
Right.
So I think that you did a good job of portraying that this guy. It always reminds me, and it's a funny thing to say, but it reminds me of Bugs Bunny. He is smarter. He comes against some of these Black Jack Chirac and all these people who are just, you know, massively stronger than he is. But because he's wittier and he's able to figure these things out, he handles them usually with great humor and stuff. And he reminds me on some of those levels, not that he's a rabbit or anything like that, but he was so funny and so smart on the way he does things, you know. And you're right, he's always being underestimated. So I think that's just a wonderful, wonderful character, which, you know, we feel for him on many levels because of that. We would like to be that smart. I mean, I'd love to be able to outmaneuver all these people. So he was the character that I admired the most in the whole thing. That was the thing I liked about it.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. And I love, I had never thought about it in terms of Bugs Bunny, but it's a really perfect analogy, because he really is a lot like Bugs Bunny when you put it that way. I hadn't thought of it. But yeah, I mean, he was a challenge to write because, I mean, you know, on some level, he's smarter than I am. So, you know, the advantage I have as the writer is I can do some research and I can, you know, really think on these things. You know, he does things very quickly in his head. It takes me a lot longer. But yeah, it's always, you know, there are certain characters that I've always been like kind of afraid to write. Like the Joker is one, because he's so insane and he's so smart that I'm just like, I don't, like, I don't know that I could get into that guy's head and do that, you know, do that justice. And that, and one of the things that I always try to do, and you know, maybe this is just the nature because I love, you know, learning and testing boundaries and stuff, is that with any project that I'm writing, with any issue or whatever, I try to give myself, I try to give myself a challenge and push myself. And in this case, you know, it's like that was one of my decisions was I want to write somebody that's smarter than me and see if I can pull that off. You know, there's a sequence in issue two where it was a structural thing. There's a sequence in the second issue where there are four tiers that go across. It's about an 8-page sequence, I think. And each of those four tiers they're all happening simultaneously in four different places in the city and with four different characters. And so you can read it across or you could read it down, you know, kind of the way you would normally read a comic. And that was really fun because they wind up lining up. And that was like a structural challenge. It was like, let's do something fun with the format, with the medium. And so I always try to give myself something to make me work for it. You know, I want to earn your money. If you're going to buy my comic, I want to earn it.
But see, you raise a subject I was going to ask you about, because this is something I can't make to sleep. I mean, you were an editor, right? Have you always been a writer as well? Or have you been, did you at some point say, you know, I could do this and start to write? Because I can't make that jump. I can read a story and say, okay, this works for this reason, but I can't come up with the good surprises. I can't come up with those things on my own. I recognize it when, like, you do it, and there are wonderful surprises along the way in the story. How did you make the leap from there? I mean, was it something you knew you could do? You'd been doing along? How'd that happen?
Yeah, well, you know, very early on, my father is a writer. My father was an Episcopal minister, but he was also a writer and an editor, and did more nonfiction work. You know, edited newspapers and stuff. But writing, and the craft of writing, was extremely, and still is. He's passed away. He's alive and well in Southern Alabama. Hey Dad. So writing was just very important. And he was a much more, a much harder, teacher, than any of my school teachers ever were. And he, you know, anytime I had a paper to write or whatever, it had to go through him first, which was, I think I hated at the time. But then when I got to college, retroactively, I thought it was pretty awesome because I had a much easier time once I got to college because I was, just a better writer. Not better in like, oh, I'm so clever, but like better than that. Just like, I knew how grammar worked. I knew how to formulate coherent thoughts and structure all those things. And all of that started to come very like second nature to me. So, and that was really the start of it. But, you know, what my dad didn't teach me about writing was storytelling. And what I realized, you know, later in life was I had been studying storytelling, because I was analyzing whether it was comic books or cartoons or movies, you know, later, and I would be analyzing, and then I started getting into reading about it. And then, I wrote some screenplays, some short films, and directed some short films when I was in college, and really thought I might go more, that route, into film and television production. But when I was getting my master's degree so that I could teach, I kind of fell back in love with comics, and just decided now I want to do this. And I was able to get the assistant editor job at Marvel. And I was in St. Louis at that time. That's where I got my master's degree. And then made the leap to New York. And so writing had always been there, but I love working with other people, whether it's, you know, students or it's peers, or I love working with creative people, and I get inspired by other creative people, just like the energy that comes from that. And so editing was really a perfect fit for me for a long time. And then I eventually just thought, you know, I mean, being at Marvel for 6 years. And like I said, I worked on some things I think are really top notch. You know, I mean, it's amazing that, you know, I've been out of Marvel now since 2007, and I'm still going to the movie theater and seeing stuff I worked on, you know, make it to the big screen is pretty amazing. Like, that was really kind of a magical time, those early and mid 2000s. And, but, you know, we were pumping out a lot of superhero stuff, and I kind of got to the point where we're doing superhero stuff. Like, there was more. I wanted to do more things. And actually, Achilles Incorporated is sort of a return to superheroes for me, that I hadn't really dealt with superheroes a whole lot in recent years. So this is kind of a return to those roots. It's a different take on it. Mm-hmm. But it's fun. And actually, the book is chock full of, I don't know that Easter eggs is the right thing, because you're not going to pick up on them. But, like, for example, the first issue, the first panel of the first page of the first issue, mm-hmm. Is an establishing shot of the exterior of a diner. And that is the diner that was across the street from Marvel when I worked there. So there's all these little things that I put in there. Some of the characters in there have names from, you know, some of the, you know, based on people that were in and around that time of my life. And, and so the, you know, some of the dates, are, you know, little references to things. And so, I put a lot of that stuff in there. So I'm curious if any of the old Marvel pals that I meet, you know, take a look at it, if they'll, how many of those things still catch?
Inside jokes kind of stuff.
Right. Yeah. More inside jokes. Cause it's not something that, you know, you, like, how would you know that the Moonstruck Diner was right across the street from New York? Like,
I didn't.
Or from Marvel, but
yeah, I didn't.
Right. Yeah. And those are just, I mean, they're, you know, I don't know that they don't really add anything, I don't think, the reading experience, but at the same time, you know, I mean, that's sort of the level of care and detail that we want to mm-hmm. put into the stuff that we do.
Well, it's like watching, I don't know if you get a chance to watch Elseworlds, the crossover between the three CW DC heroes. They had all kinds of in jokes and stuff that were allusions to things that had happened in the past. The guy who played the Flash back in like the 90s, I think it was in the Flash uniform again. And I remember just being bowled over by all these wonderful little things, you know, and somebody who could watch the show and enjoy it without getting those things. But if you got that, it just added a little something else to it that made it fun. I think that's what your book will do.
Yeah, yeah, and John Wesley Shipp, that was the guy that played the Flash in the 80s. I loved that show when it was on. I thought that show was great. I really enjoy the current Flash TV show a lot. I love Gustav Grant. Not that I need to plug DC's TV show, but I'm sure those shows are doing fine. I really like the Flash, and my sons like the Flash a lot, so that's the one that we try to stay on top of.
Did you get a chance to watch Elseworlds? I'll just ask you that, and then we'll move on from that.
I'm trying to. I don't remember the names.
Oh, you'd remember.
Titles, but I remember. I remember him getting in the Jay Garrick uniform.
Yeah, but there was a time when what happened was.
I haven't watched that one yet.
Somebody switched the powers around, and so Oliver Queen had, the guy who was Oliver Queen was Barry Allen, and the guy who was Barry Allen was Oliver Queen. And they do all kinds of stuff like that. So I have to.
That sounds really fun. Yeah, I'll have to check that one out. Then.
Yeah, I would recommend it. But more than that, I'm not going to say. We'll get back to your stuff here. I've got to ask because, you know, this book is actually set a little in the future, 2026. I guess that's to allow for some of the things that happens with the Power Core and the things to take place. Is that why it's set a little more in the future?
Yeah. That is why. And I, you know, sometimes I just like to. Like, it's just a little easier. Like, I remember going to see the first X-Men film in the year 2000, and it just had a caption early on that's like, just, you know, the not too distant future or the near future or something like that. And it just sort of like, it just was like, okay, it's the world, you know, but it's a little different. Mm-hmm. And that just sort of like massaged everything over right there. And so that was just kind of a, that was why I put it in the future.
Okay. Because it really works. I mean, I enjoyed it. Although the interesting thing too, I noticed was that the future isn't all that different from today. It was the thing that I came across with it. You know, the technology isn't all that different, and things like that are very. And that probably has to do with the boosters and things like that shaking up society, as it were.
Yeah, and so in some ways, society has taken a few steps backwards in the book. And, you know, again, like I said, you know, there are these sort of, you know, if you want to look for them, there are sort of these socio-political sort of undertones to it. I mean, they're there if you want them, but if you don't want them, if you just want a fun book, you know, by all means, like, don't be afraid of the book. You know, we don't dive deep into that stuff. Some of it's in the background and whatnot. But you know, I think that's just the way the world is. I've been doing a lot of research for a couple of projects lately, and I've had to do a lot of research on the early 1900s, and then I've been doing a lot of research on like the Middle Ages for another project, and I've read about 12 books, you know, on the Middle Ages and stuff. And you know, one of the things that I realized is like, well, yeah, we have not changed. Like, the trappings have changed. The, you know, what we build our houses out of has changed, but people have not changed all that much in that amount of time, which is, I don't know. Like, it's, sometimes that feels a little comforting. You know, kind of feels like we're not alone, and hey, we've lasted this long, so maybe we'll make it another, 20 generations. Mm-hmm. And then the other times I think about it, and I'm like, shouldn't we have come further? So I guess you can look at it either way.
It's interesting because the characters in there are very realistic. Even there's like a frog guy whose name is Gus, who shows up somewhere along the line.
Yeah,
I get a kick out of him because he actually, you know, the fact that he's a frog really has nothing to do with his character, as far as I can tell. But it's just
no. And sometimes because I really enjoyed Daniel Main as the artist. I can't believe we've gone this long and I haven't mentioned Daniel. But Daniel Main is the artist, and he like really wanted to draw superheroes, and so I was like, well, we're not doing superheroes exactly. If that's all right. And so we had these conversations over email, and I said, but I'll tell you what, like, I'll let you know when you can just go like just design characters that you want to design. And I don't care if they're like mutated looking or whatever. So you can have some fun with them. And those two guys that are sort of those bodyguards that you're talking about, Gus is one of them. I forget the other guy's name, but I think the script actually says like, do what you want, like have fun. If you've got an idea for like a power you want me to use or something, like, let me know. And he's like, no, I'll just have fun drawing a frog guy. I'm like, sounds good to me, you know? Yeah. And that's part of it too. You know, these, you know, I grew up, you know, as a kid reading comics. And so for me, there is this sort of, even when I'm writing something that's more serious and Achilles, you know, has a lot of, you know, hopefully, humorous parts to it and stuff. But like that, I always want, if not the book itself to be fun and funny, I want the process of making the books be fun for all of us. Mm-hmm. The last comic I wrote for Marvel was a one shot. It was a Guardians team up issue, and I co-wrote that with Andy Lanning, and it was Guardians team up number 5, I believe. And it was Rocket Raccoon teaming up with the Pet Avengers. Mm-hmm. And Rocket's beer had been stolen, and so he was trying to get it back. And like, to me, like, that was just, you know, it's this completely silly one-off thing, but you know, we got to put together the Pets of Evil Masters, the supervillain group. So like, so, you know, I really enjoy writing stuff that's like totally bizarro, silly, to something that's maybe a little bit more serious like this. Or, you know, I'm working on a pretty hard sci-fi thing right now that we haven't announced or talked about yet. And I like jumping around and like I said, it's challenging, and yeah. I like challenging myself. So.
Well, you like to do different kinds of stories. You don't want to write country western all the time. I mean, let's say you're good at country western. You know, you don't want to write westerns every time. You want to be able to flex other muscles besides the western muscles. And I think that's what you're doing. You're having fun and enjoying what you're doing by doing different kinds of things and putting your own mark on it and making it enjoyable to. Because I have to say, I like the frog guy. He made me laugh when I saw him because, you know, one of the great things, too, and I think comics have started doing this, used to be you had to explain where the frog guy came from. how there was this frog guy standing there, and you had to do a long explanation as to how this happened.
Right.
Your comics have reached that level where we don't have to do that, thankfully. We can just kind of enjoy the fact that he's there, and we don't need you to sit down and write a treatise as to where Gus came from, unless you really want to do that at some point, you know. So I think that's cool.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And I think, you know, I mean, there was certainly in the 80s, the editor-in-chief at Marvel was well-known. How am I blanking on his name? I feel weird as a semi-Marvel historian. Yeah. Jim Shooter. Thank you. Yeah. I can't believe I blanked on that. But yeah, Jim Shooter was well-known for you know, making sure, like, you basically gave a character's bio, like, whenever they showed up. Oh. Which, you know, at the time, there weren't trade paperbacks. People weren't really collecting them as much. And so, like, any random issue would be somebody's first issue of the comic. And you know, that's kind of a rule of thumb that we still try to use, but we try to be a little bit more subtle about doing that kind of thing. But yeah, I remember when he got to Secret Wars, the very first Secret Wars in the 80s, and you had like 20 superheroes, and there's like a panel with somebody going, look, there's Spider-Man, She-Hulk, Falcon, you know, like, I mean, it was just like everybody would get named. It got a little ridiculous in those cases. But, you know, I'm of course now I'm in my early 40s, and I go back and look at that, and it's just fun to me. It's not like I don't look at that and go like, that's poorly done. I just look at that and I'm like, this is kind of awesome. Like, you know, but I guess that's what nostalgia gets you. But
well, see, I also think, yeah, though, that you, if you tell the story well enough and you show who they are through what they do and what they say, then we get to know them. You don't need to, you know, there was a show called Legend of the Rangers, and all these people stood around with the little symbols of their things, and for 20, 30 minutes, they all stood there and said, I'm a such and such, and my race doesn't do this and does do this and blah, 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 blah. And after about the 8th one of them, I was going, oh my gosh, is this ever going to end?
Right.
So it's, I would much rather that you tell the story and let the story tell who the person is.
That's one of the things I teach my writing students. So like in my intro to writing course, over the time of the course, my students will write a complete 5-page story, and we like start at like, what is a story? And we build it from there until they got a 5-page comic book script, or a comic book script, just to be clear, like for a 5-page comic book story. And I always have people go, well, here's, like, basically, like, they'll spend their first page and it's all exposition. It's all like, here's everything you need to know before we start the story. And you know, that's one of the first lessons is, don't start with exposition. You just used 20% of your space and there's no story on it. Mm-hmm. You know, like, think about going into a movie and the first half an hour is just somebody telling you, like, about the world and all that sort of stuff. And, like, you just, you know, I mean, you'd walk out. And so, you know, that's every writer struggles with the data, you know, with the exposition. How do you get it? And, you know, one of the things is, you know, to your point about, you know, Gus and not explaining where the Frogman comes from, mm-hmm, like, pick and choose. Like, what do you actually need to tell the reader, and what can the reader figure out for themselves? Because one of the secrets about writing and about comics is readers want to do work. Like, they want to figure it out. They want to fill in the gutters between two panels, right? So, you know, give them enough that they can fill in those gaps. And I tend to think that they will appreciate the work a little bit more if you don't treat them like they're
dumb,
you know, not very bright. Yeah.
Because I read so many books and I sit there and say, you listen, you dumb person, I have to tell you everything along the way or you'll be too stupid to figure out what I'm trying to tell you. And I just, you know, when I get to that, I just throw up my hands and say, well, that's enough of that, because that's just not the way. Now, your book doesn't do that, which I think is really a great thing, because I've had the chance to read the 4 issues, which I enjoyed tremendously. I did want to say, it's from the writing standpoint, because, you know, even though I'm not a scripter in that sense, I do write reviews. So I do exam, mm-hmm, and stuff like that. I love the book. I thought it was great fun. It was something different. You know, so many comic companies are shying away from superheroes because they feel it's all been done. We can't possibly think of anything else to do. Well, you did. You thought of something else to do that I thought was really enjoyable, and a different look at things and how we might react differently than we expect. in this situation. So I really enjoyed the examination of that. I love the, of course, the main character to me was a great guy. I just admired him all over the place. Thought the world of him. And I do want to say that the pacing was really nice and quick. It didn't, you're talking about all the dialogue that some people go through in exposition. You don't do a lot of that. But if you do that, it's done in such a way that's interesting, that we don't get bored. And I'm so happy with that. I can't let you go without talking about the fourth issue, which I really enjoyed. Yeah. You know, the first three issues, of course, you got a four-issue miniseries, you got to do some kind of resolution. I really loved the resolution in the fourth issue. If you're going to buy this book, and I encourage you to do so, be sure to hang on till the fourth issue, because the payoff is really enjoyable when you get to the end. We get this, there's an expression on the main character's face at one point. I just sat there and I laughed. I looked at it. When something's happening, he says a certain sense, and I don't want to spoil it because it might ruin the story, but he says something and he's got the look on his face that I just was like, and certain things happen. I just laughed right out loud. I said, that is so well done. That is, you know, just terrific.
Yeah, I mean, Daniel, I think, deserves a lot of credit for that. I think I know exactly which panel you're talking about. And Daniel deserves a lot of credit because he nails that expression. Thank you. I mean, that's really nice to hear because, you know, it's not really out. And so we don't have a lot of feedback from people that aren't kind of in our circle of trusted few. So, you know, to have you read the whole thing, thank you for reading the whole thing, mm-hmm. first of all. And then, you know, I'm just so glad that you enjoyed it, that you genuinely enjoyed it. And I'm actually really glad that you mentioned the fourth issue, because that is the one that I am always nervous about. Like, does this resolve well? Does, you know, do we set this all up so that it pays off right? And to hear somebody, you know, say specifically, yeah, that it works is a really, that's a comforting thing to hear.
Well, I have to say, because a lot of times I'll read a miniseries and the setup is fabulous and I'm going, oh my gosh, this is going to end so well. And then it sputters to the end and I go, that's it? We did 4 to 12 issues to get to that? But with yours, when I got to the fourth issue, it was just such a huge payoff. This just, you know, this very satisfying thing. I mean, I'd love to see more of Achilles Incorporated. I know you said you're too busy to do more of that, but a one shot would be great fun. I mean, I'd love to see more of these characters and the situation and things like that. What happens afterwards would really be interesting to me. So the fourth issue though just got me. I couldn't stop reading them once I started, but when I got to number 4, that was the really big, I don't like to use the word, but the climax to me, it was just the one that was like, I was just, yes, oh yes, you know, one of those things that happens that you just enjoy and you just relish it, because I thought it was a wonderful, wonderful fourth issue.
Awesome. Yeah, that's great to hear. And, you know, the Ransom and the World, you know, I definitely want to revisit it. And I think I will at some point, you know, and especially, you know, if it sells well and people react positively to it, then certainly that would incentivize me to come back to it, sooner rather than later. Cause I don't want, you know, if we do have a nice fan base, for it, you know, I don't want them to wait around too long. And if I have to find a way to get back because there's that interest from fans, then we'll find a way to make it happen sooner rather than later. But you know, I mean, I did so much world building before I started crafting the story that, you know, like, when I start doing the world building stuff and really figure out, you know, how does this, you know, how does Ransom fit in this world and how did this world develop? There's so many other stories with Ransom and even stories without Ransom, that I wanted to do. Actually, when I was reading it today, I was like, I really want to do like a one shot with the fire lady. Like, I'd like to do something where you get to know her and she's so harsh. Like, why is she so harsh?
Well, like, good reason for that.
Yeah. So it's, yeah, I do find the world itself intriguing. And so, I think it's likely that I'll come back and revisit it. I definitely want to.
Because I got to say, too, though, you mentioned world building. And I honestly think, and I hate to criticize your former place of employment. You don't have to agree with this at all. But I don't like it when a person, particularly a person of color, is shoved into an existing costume. Because I think that's, to me, it's not worthy of the characters. I think the characters deserve a good world building thing. There's several out there with, particularly with diverse characters, that I really love because they do like you do. They build this wonderful world that's different. And you, as you said, it takes time and effort on your part. But boy, it's so worth it when it works like yours does. You really get to, you know, you forget you're reading a comic and you're in this world watching stuff going on, you know, kind of when you do it right like you did. So I just, you know, I just have to say that was one of the things I really appreciated about the book particularly was that you invested the time to make this a place to visit that was really engrossing. So I just thought that was terrific.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, we and again, it wasn't just me. You know, Daniel, Daniel put a lot of effort into the character designs, and Francesca, our colorist, and even Marco, the letterer. Marco's wonderful, down to the covers. You know, mm-hmm. The covers have a kind of a unique design where mm-hmm. the logo's in the middle of the cover, and mm-hmm. It's sort of like a playing card sort of thing. And the boosters are always on top. So it's, mm-hmm. you know, and it was just put the time in, try and make a, like I said, make a project where you're not treating your readers as though they're idiots.
mm-hmm. Well, you know, when I say you, of course, you can include all the people who made the book happen. You right. know? But on the other hand, though, as a writer, you have to conceive a lot of this stuff. Now, granted, other people will, you know, your artists and your colorists and stuff will add wonderful elements to it that flesh it out maybe in ways that you may not have ever imagined. But I just loved the book. I just thought it was one of those books on a lot of different levels that just, you know, spoke to me and made me enjoy it really tremendously. So I'm gonna look up your stuff from Comics Experience more and find out more and enjoy your whatever kind of offerings you have. I hadn't followed those stuff from SourcePoint Press, so I got to go after those, the other books that you mentioned. So I will be doing that as well because I love this book and it turned me on to all that.
Great. That is the best thing I could hear. yeah. Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure. You know, I've listened to the podcast for quite a while, so it's really fun to actually be on it and get to talk with you. Yeah.
Oh, great! Because I only one other person that I know of has listened to the podcast and been a guest. It was Jonathan Lewis. He always comes on and talks about how wonderful it is to be on here. Actually, listen to it for a long time. That's a rare experience for me. I don't really follow up and find out who's listening to me and stuff. But you know, it's always a pleasure to hear that. Though I have to say, it's really nice to do that because I do invest a lot of time and I try really hard to ask good questions. The goal is to get people to enjoy what they're reading more, and I think hopefully in our conversation that'll do that too. Maybe entice some people who might not have done it originally to get into the book. And those people who do read it might get to understand it and you know, get more out of it than if they just read the book. Although the book itself is, you know, certainly terrific and wonderful. I keep using that word, but I just think that's the way to do it. This is kind of what comics should be like, the kind of storytelling that made me get into comics in the first place. And it's nice to see that continue. It's nice to see that, you know, take me where I hadn't been before. So I like that.
Ah, that's awesome. And just to do the shameless plug thing, for those of you listening, if you're interested in reading the book, and I hope you are, certainly, it's from SourcePoint Press, and it comes out in April. And be sure to ask your retailer or order it online, and get yourself a copy.
Okay,
we would really appreciate it.
That's what I was going to ask. So you're ahead of me on that one. So that's good. Are there other projects that you can talk about? I know you mentioned there's several you're working on that you can't really talk about. You mentioned some books that are out now. Are there other books coming out that you can talk about?
Well, I had a nonfiction book, The Comics Experience Guide to Writing Comics and Graphic Novels. We went back. The Comics Experience Guide to Writing Comics, which came out from Impact Books. Um, And it's a whole guide to writing comics. So anybody that's interested in that, you know, there's the book. Obviously, there's also Comic Experience and the courses and things. But the book itself would be a great place to start if that's of interest. And actually, that book has, you know, one of the things that was fun about doing that book was I used real examples of projects that I was actually working on at the time, and there's some stuff actually from Achilles Incorporated that's in that, and there's some work from some other projects that are not published yet that are in there, and I use those as examples and show, you know, pieces of scripts and all that kind of stuff. But that's it. I mean, mainly it's the Comics Experience books. I'm going to be at C2E2, where we're going to have I'm going to do several panels breaking into comics, a writing for comics panel, and a budgeting your comic, which is super fun. And by fun, I mean depressing. I'm doing a bunch of shows this year. I'll be at Awesome Con in Washington, D.C. I'll be at San Diego Comic Con. It looks like I'll be at a number of others as well, but I think it gets us all the way in July right there. Comic Palooza in Houston, I'll be a guest there. So, you know, if you're in any of those markets and feel like coming to a show, you know, certainly come by and say hi. I'll sign a book for you and we'll have a chat. And that's it. Right now I'm pretty focused on Achilles.
Okay, good.
and then working on working on some of my own other projects, but we've got a bunch of projects. Comics Experience and SourcePoint have a bunch of projects that are in the pipeline that we haven't announced yet. You know, it's always that thing. We haven't announced it yet, but we've got some really, really clever and fun stuff that's coming up. And you know, like I said, the response to the books has been really, really great. And one of the nice things is when somebody buys the book and then you talk to them or you hang out with them online or whatever, and then they liked it, and then they find out that it was written by somebody who was relatively new to the medium, and they're shocked. And like, that's like, you're like, right on, right on. It works. Right now I'm between Comics Experience, doing the teaching and all that, and running the business, and then my own writing of comics, and then I do a fair amount of freelance writing for other places. I write there's an app called Yarn, which is really interesting, because it's when you go into it, like on your phone, it basically, what it does is it turns your phone into like the phone of one of the characters in the story. And so you're reading the text message, and every time you tap your screen, the next message, you know, in the chat chain comes up. And they have the Marvel license. And so I've actually been writing Marvel characters, but I've been writing their text messages.
Oh, wow.
Which is really fun. And I've had a ton of fun doing Guardians of the Galaxy stories where they're texting each other in space. Like, those have been a lot of fun. So I've been writing for that and doing some consulting work out in LA all kinds of stuff. So, you know, keep myself busy and I'll certainly be checking in when we've got other projects coming up and coming out, and
that'd be great.
Maybe we'll be able to do this again.
I'd like to do that. Now, if let's say we want to follow you on social media, are you like on Facebook or Instagram, any of that stuff?
I'm on Facebook. I keep my personal Facebook page to primarily folks I know.
Smart.
But the Comics Experience has a Facebook page, which you can just look up if you just do a search for it. And then, if you are interested in any of the things that Comics Experience might have to offer, I would say go to our homepage, thecomicsexperience.com, and sign up for the newsletter. It's, I think, in the top right hand corner, if I recall. We may have moved it. But sign up for the newsletter, and then you'll get, you'll know what's coming up and what might be a good place for you to jump in if that's of interest to you. On Twitter, it's @ComicExperience, and that's comic singular, not plural, because they only allowed you 14 letters when we did that. So we had to pull one out, and so we pulled that one out. So it's @ComicExperience, and that is sometimes me personally, but it's also Meredith and Nicole who run that as well. But that's mainly where I am. We have an Instagram account which we put up a lot of cool art and stuff on that, but that's it. That's where you can find me.
Very cool. Well, Andy, you're doing wonderful stuff, and I'm gonna do my very best to keep track of it. It's a lot of it. I'm going to have to work hard to get up to it, but I think I can do it, especially after this book sold me. I'm looking forward to other stuff that you're doing. So, man, keep it up. And, man, we'll have to talk again, just like you said. I'd really enjoy that.
Sounds great, Wayne. Thanks so much.
And that's a wrap for this episode. Until next time, keep reading your comics.